So, I think it's already been said, I'm Brian's dad, you all know that. So I am down here visiting family. It's been a real treat being Brian's dad. But from the beginning it was not so. No, it's always been a good time. Brian actually has a brother. I really hope that we can get his brother down here sometime just to visit with everyone and say hello. Those of you that have raised kids, you know that when you're raising kids that the two aren't alike, and that, you know, what works with one, you know, doesn't work with the other, and you're always trying to figure out, you know, what works with one, and, you know, that you can't treat them both alike, because, you know, raising a family, you know, people are just, you know, so different. You know, with one, a 2x4 isn't hard enough, and the other, you know, you look at them crossways, and, you know, it just completely melts them, you know, and you really need to be mindful of that as a parent. You know, I love talking about family, and it seems to be one of those perennial topics in the book. Have you ever thought about God raising his family? And the Bible being the story about God raising his family, and what works good with one child doesn't necessarily work with another, and God has a whole lot of people that he's trying to work with. And, you know, we talked about Deborah last week, right? I mean, Deborah, wow. You know, but not everybody in God's family is a Deborah. You know, a lot of people are, you know, they're just so broken, and, you know, we have so much baggage, you know. But that's okay, because God is at work in you to will and to work for his good pleasure. God can help you work through all that stuff, right? So we need to have faith in him no matter how broken you are. And some people are beyond that. Some people are just, you know, four sheets of the wind. They are just long gone, and lo and behold. And one of the things that I like about the book of Judges is when you see God working with his family, and you know what works for Deborah and Barak, you know, it just isn't going to work for, you know, we're going to talk about Jephthah today, you know. And if you are a parent that you've got a really tough child, you know, there are some tough nuts to crack out there. You know, you just pray, you know, you don't give up on that person. You work with them. God takes a very long view of people, right? So up in the congregation where I attend, we have a lot of very, very broken families, you know, and family needs to be talked about so much. There's like two churches in town, right? There's two sound churches. One, it's like, you know, everyone's, you know, I'm not even going to go there. Invergrove is a very dirt level church. Let me tell you, I'll just say that. So it's perfect for me, because, you know, I'm basically a dirt level guy. I was raised the wrong way. I wasn't raised in a Christian home, if there is such a thing. Neither of my parents graduated from high school, you know. So I'm like just totally off a different bolt of cloth than some people. You know, sometimes I feel like I don't even fit in, but that makes it perfect, because there are these gifts and talents that we talk about. You know, you think you don't fit in? Hey, that means you're perfect. That means you are going to offer something that other people in the group aren't going to offer. It is just a horrible thing when you're looking for a congregation that you want them to be just like you. You know, you totally fit in. You know, they look like you. They talk like you. They're from the same background as you. You know, hey, I found a place where everyone's just like me, and they think like me, and they act like me. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I hope you can find somewhere else to worship, because you're not going to be offering anything there, right? So I guess I said all that to say this. We're going to be looking at the book of Judges today, and we're going to be looking at the story of Jephthah. But before we talk about Jephthah, we need to talk a little bit about what was going on in the book, because after chapter 10, the stories just get weirder and weirder, and it takes some explanation, right? So we read a scripture before I got up here. And in chapter 2, verses 18 and 19, it says that, you know, so the people were like in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out. And if you've had any members of the church that they're like in and out and in and out and in and out, you know that that isn't good. And that every time they go in and out, they go out, they're basically, they're gone longer than they were the last time. And when they're in shorter than they were last time. And you have to work harder and harder and harder to help them to be faithful. And even though you're doing an increasing amount of work, they're faithful for a shorter amount of time, and then they go out again, and they're out longer, and they fall harder. And you know that only happens a few times. And then they're basically like they're just gone, and I mean they're gone, right? I mean they are gone. And so if we go to chapter 10 of the book of Judges, they kind of reach a point where they're like gone. So when you read the book of Judges, it tells us in chapter 2 that every time they go out and they come back, when they come back, they're actually worse than they were before. It says that in chapter 2, verses 18 and 19. So that means that, like, when we read about Deborah, the story of Deborah is everything is at its best. Deborah is just as a child of God, beyond top shelf, right? I mean, she is just a flawless individual. But and then she, you know, she helps people along. That's her gift. She can help everybody to do what they ought to do, and she helps Barak. And Barak says, well, you know, I'll go if you go, which isn't the best thing, but I'll say this for Barak. He didn't say, well, show me a sign. I'm not going to go unless there's a sign. Or I'm going to go, but I'm not going to do what you say. You know, there wasn't any of that. Hey, once he was there, he was all in, right? So we go to the story of Gideon, and guess what? Gideon needs a lot of signs. We're not going to judge him real harshly, because of that. But I will say, Barak didn't need signs. Deborah didn't need signs. Gideon needed signs, and he needed a lot of signs. And despite the fact that God did a lot of work to make Gideon faithful, he was faithful only for a short amount of time, right? So he starts by pulling down his dad's idols. It's a story about family. There's a lot about family in the story of Gideon. He pulls down his dad's idols, but as soon as he's beaten the Midianites, what does he do? Up those idols just go. So like what was the point of the whole victory, right? And then you go to chapter 10. Chapter 10 is what I love about the book of Judges is it's so easy to understand. It starts at the beginning by saying, this is what's going to happen in the book. It's like, this is how you should understand it. This is what's going to happen. Chapter 10, it's like God announces, hey, this is the transition of the book. Okay, so this is the transition of the book. In chapter 10, the people say, save us from our problems. And God says, you know, I think I'm going to sit this one out. God can't say no to me. You know, it's like, you know, I went to church and I took the Lord's Supper. I mean, what more does he want, right? You know, well, that's a good question. What more does he want, right? And no one's really asking that question now in the book of Judges. We've reached a point where they've been in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out. And now basically they're just going to be out, and God knows this, right? So not everyone is a Deborah. So God says, I'm not going to deliver you. That doesn't mean God is saying, I hate you. That isn't God saying, I'm not going to work with you. That's just saying, I'm not going to work now the way I was working in the first 9 chapters. And you look at the chapter right before that, chapter 9. You have one group of Israelites led by an angry, proud, self-serving individual. And you have another group of Israelites led by a proud, self-serving individual. And the people are saying, hey, God, I want you to take a side on this. What side is the Lord on? You know, Joshua asked that question. Are you on our side or are you on their side? He says, man, I'm on the Lord's side, actually. I'm not on any side. I'm on God's side, and that's the way we need to be. Sometimes when you are in a family, And it's sort of like chapter 9 of the book of Judges. You've got, you know, the mom side or the dad side. You've got the sibling side, the cousin side. And you've been in one of those families where they want you to take sides. You need to be determined. I'm not on anyone's side but the Lord's side. You know, just like the John the Baptist study this morning. Hey, whatever God says, I'm going to do it. Doesn't matter what you say. Doesn't matter what you say. I'm going to be on the Lord's side. My family isn't going to tell me what's right or wrong. My wife or husband isn't going to tell me how often I'm going to worship. When those doors are open, I'm here. And I'm here even if I have to go by myself. Because I'm not on your side, I'm not on their side, I'm not anyone else's side, I'm not even on my side, I'm on the Lord's side. So when we get to the story of Jephthah, the book of Judges starts saying things that it didn't have to say before. Because the story is going to need some explanation. It says this a couple times after chapter 10. It says, in these days there was no king in Israel. The people did what was right in their own eyes. That's just what the people were doing. That's not being on the Lord's side. That's being on your own side. When you're doing what's right in your own eyes, you're saying, God doesn't have the right to tell me anything. If I don't like it, I'm not going to do it. I don't have to do anything, God says, because I'm going to decide what's right or wrong. Only me. I'm the only one who's going to tell me how to live. So when we read about the book of Jephthah, there's going to be some weird stuff, and it just gets weirder as the book goes on. Remember, did they think they were doing right? Yeah, they thought they were doing right. They were doing what was right in their own eyes, and that's actually the problem. So let's look at Judges chapter 11. We're going to talk about Gideon. We need to remember that while all of this is going on, that God is still at work, right? God is at work in you to will and to work for your good pleasure. God wants to save Jephthah just like all the other people, but you know, not everyone is a Deborah, and God has got to work different ways with different people. Now, in chapter 11, verses 1 through 4, we find that there was Jephthah, a Gileadite. He was a valiant warrior, but he was the son of a harlot, and Gilead was the father of Jephthah. Gilead's wife bore him sons, and when his wife's sons grew up, they drove Jephthah out, and they said, you're not going to have an inheritance in the father's house, for you are the son of another woman. So Jephthah fled from his brothers. He lived in the land of Tob. You know, he went up north. Worthless fellows gathered about Jephthah, and they went out with him. It's interesting that the story of Jephthah begins with an explanation of his family. And you see this a lot in the book of Judges, like with Gideon. It has to begin with the story of his family. What's going on? He says, well, you know, I mean, my family, we're just a bunch of nobodies, right? You can have this. As you get older, you have this stuff called baggage, right? It's like, well, you know, I've already put myself in this box. If you don't understand Gideon's family, you cannot understand the story. And when we get to Jephthah, it begins and ends with a story about his family. Just like with Gideon, it ends with a story about his family too. Because if we don't understand his family, we're not going to understand the story of Jephthah. You know, and it's like later when we read about the story of Samuel. You cannot understand Samuel unless you understand his family. Wow, when I read about his mother and the faith she had, wow, I really understand Samuel because I understand the family that boy came from. You know, the story of the Levite and the Danites, just more stuff about, you know, his family. You know, he's his mom. So it's obvious that the family isn't good with this, right? Because they cast him out. I actually feel sorry for the guy. You know, it's not his fault how he came into the world, but you know, people just aren't going to put up with him through absolutely no fault of his own. Have you ever felt like you have gotten the shaft in life? Totally no fault of your own. You just literally cannot cut a break no matter what you do. What do I have to be loved? What do I have to do to be accepted? You know, there's nothing you can answer. You're just out. So let me ask you a question. Would you still be willing to serve God if you were, you know, there was that proverbial cloud was just following you around? Would you willing to be serve God like that? Do other people have to love me? Do other people have to like me, you know, in order for me to serve God? Or do I realize that God loves me? I think that's a big message of the book, right? Because the arm of flesh will fail you. One of the prophets said, if my mother or my father forsake me, the Lord will pick me up, right? So when we read this book, we have to understand God has a family and you're in God's family too. I say I've come down here to visit family. Guess what? You're my family too. That's a big joy that my wife and I have when we travel. We get to meet God's family, you know. Some people say, well, I don't have a family. I'm just living here by myself. No, you do have a family. You have God's family. You have the best family of all. You know, and in that family, you have responsibilities and you have a place and you have gifts and talents that God has put in you, and he expects you to use those things. Figure it out. Work with him. God is working with you. God does more work than anyone. So while he's out there, I guess him and his rough bunch, they gain quite a reputation. And lo and behold, they're being oppressed by the Ammonites, and verse four, the sons of Ammon fought against Israel, and when the sons of Ammon fought against Israel, the elders of Gilead went to Jephthah from the land of Tob, and they said to Jephthah, "Come and be our chief." So there's a need here, right? There's a very great need of God's people. They're being oppressed. You know what would really be great here? I wish I could read, you know, obviously there's a great need. Maybe we should just pray about this. You know, maybe we should just pray about this. Hey, this is after chapter 10. You don't read about that anymore, you know. You don't read about people repenting anymore. You don't see people saying, you know, I wonder what God really wants. Maybe if our lives were right and we were seeking God, that, you know, the things would be a little bit different. You know, you don't read that, and you don't read about people going to the tabernacle. All that stuff is gone, right? But he does want a reward. Remember how great Deborah was. She wasn't looking for a reward. You know, when Barak was told that the glory wouldn't be his, he didn't have any problem with that. I guess he wasn't looking for a reward either. You get to the story of Gideon, everyone wants a reward. And you get to the story of Jephthah, I won't do it unless I get an award. When I was a kid, I used to go to... I wasn't raised a Christian, right? So we went to a lot of denominational churches, and by every like big piece of ornamental glass or whatever, there's someone's name under it, you know, because they want the credit. You know, sometimes, you know, people are doing things, and well, the other day I was visiting Sister So and So, you know, and just fluffing yourself up, you know. Can you serve God without any credit? I think that's just a great question. Can you serve God if people think that you're doing nothing for the church? And you actually are, but everyone in the church thinks you're doing nothing. Can you still serve God? Or say, well, let me tell you how much I do. Yeah, that's how the book of Job plays out, right? He's pushed on the subject of works. Well, obviously, you're not doing enough for God. Yeah, well, let me tell you what I do for God. You know, and that's unfortunate, right? Can you serve God without any hope of earthly gain, even if it doesn't benefit you in any way? I remember one of our elders, Jimmy Eccles, says when he was telling people to, you know, just, you know, work with other people and do good things, he said, and guess what? It's really important that no one knows that you did it. And after you do it, people are going to say, you know, that Lance, I'm not sure that he does anything here. Is that bad? No, that's great. That means that your left hand doesn't know what your right hand is doing, and Jesus is the one that told us to serve that way, right? So, anyway... Jephthah says, you know, I'm not going to do it unless I can be number one, the head honcho. He said, absolutely, you can be the head honcho. So, chapter 11, verses 12 through 28, it's the biggest single section here. Jephthah becomes the head honcho, and he actually shows that he has an incredible gift. And I think this is why he's mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11, I think it's verse 32, because you see what a great negotiator he is. You know, some people just have a way of working with others. They can like calm other people down. Hey, why are you doing this? Why are you angry? Let's talk about this. So he writes a letter to the belligerent party, the king of Ammon, and he makes, you know, what's going on here? You know, and that's a good thing. Have you ever had like strife in the family and, you know, someone comes home and they're already angry, right? They're already angry. They kick the dog on the way in, you know. They're ready for the fight before they even laid eyes on you. And when you open your mouth to explain, hey, they already had their speech worked out in the car. They just are waiting for you to shut up so they can utter their lines, right? Jephthah's not that way. I think he has a legitimate gift here. So he writes to the king of Ammon, what's going on here? And he says, you stole our land. Well, that's a good question. Did Israel steal land from Ammon? So if you go back to Numbers chapter 21, the whole story is told. Israel, in fact, did not steal Ammon's land. So when Israel came in, there was another party who was occupying that land, Og, the king of Bashan. And Og, the king of Bashan, wanted to destroy Israel, and he attacked Israel. It wasn't Ammonite land. It belonged to Og, the king of Bashan. And God protected his people. They took it from Og, the king of Bashan. So what universe is there that when we take land from them, that somehow we're taking it away from you? Have you ever had a sibling that, no matter what, they always think you wronged them somehow, you know? You did something for someone else. Well, you didn't do it for me. Have you ever worked with people like that? That's a difficult environment. You know, some people, they always think they're wronged, right? So he goes on, he said other things. You know, when we were around Ammonite territory, you know, we said we'd buy your water. We didn't touch anything. We didn't take anything. Og, the king of Bashan, if you think that's your land, he had that land for almost 400 years. Why didn't you take it from him? But we haven't wronged you in any way. You know, have you ever thought that like reasoning is going to get you out of situations? Man, in this life, if you're not ready to deal with hardship, you better buy a helmet and buckle up. Because we rehearse these lines in our head. You know, I'm just going to make this case and it's going to be airtight and I'm going to explain to them what's going on and how my motives have been good. And when I come to this person and I explain, you know, we didn't mean that. You took it the wrong way. It's not like that at all. Everything is going to be great. And, you know, you make that speech, which in your own mind, man, that's just going to even everything out, man. We're going to be buds after that. You've actually dug yourself in deeper. Have you ever had that situation? You know, can you serve God anyway, right? Okay, well, you know, that's the situation. So basically, you know, they have this battle. You know, God is the one who gives them victory. He knows this full well. You know, evidently, it's like Jephthah understands that God is going to save them. But I want you to notice in chapter 11, verse 29, the Spirit of the Lord comes upon Jephthah. He passed through Gilead and Manasseh. You know, he's gathering people. And it says he made a vow to the Lord. A vow to the Lord, that's great. Is he going to say, we have sinned against you. Help us to turn to you with our whole hearts. Please send us more teachers like Deborah so we can know what we ought to do. No, there's none of that. He says, God, if you can help me win this battle, I'll sacrifice the first thing out of my door. And he doesn't say the first thing out of the barn or the first thing out of the yard. He says the first thing out of the house. Okay? So all this time that he was saying this stuff about God, and he just seems like he's so right on, all of a sudden he says, God, I'm going to sacrifice one of my family members to you. Have you ever been with someone and you're talking about God and everything seems totally on the level, and all of a sudden they say something about God that is just so far off base, you literally can't believe what you heard, and you have to say, what? Because like we say, talk is cheap. Talk is very cheap. We need to walk our walk, right? I mean, if we say that we love the Lord, we better be willing to walk the walk. If you say that you are a Christian, you better be very careful about God's reputation. You need to think about God's reputation when you're at work, you're going to be just like Jephthah. They know that you worship God on Sunday. They know that you worship God on Wednesday. They know what you're all about. But all of a sudden, something comes out of your mouth. You've done something extremely egregious and you're laughing about it. It sounds just as shocking to them as this sounds shocking to us. And indeed, it is very, very shocking. But you know what? Not everyone's a Deborah, you know. God has got to do rescue with a lot of very, very messed up people. So he makes this vow that he's going to offer this up as a burnt offering. He wins the battle, and then I want you to notice at the end of the chapter here, he comes back. Where is it? I got my glasses on, so I'm without excuse today. And verse 34, he comes back, and his daughter comes out. I don't know, was he hoping his wife would come out or something? I mean, this whole bit is confusing. Maybe no matter who came out the door, you know, there would have been some reason to lament. Oh, man, I wish it wasn't you. And this is so sad because, you know, she comes out with tambourines, you know. She's so happy. Man, wouldn't it be cool if someone greeted you like that? Can you imagine coming home from a long trip and it's like there are ribbons all over the house and, you know, they won't even wait for you to come in. You're not even out of the car yet and they're already mobbing around the car, you know, just, you know, banging on things and just cheering your arrival. Is that a beautiful picture or what? Well, guess what, girl? I promised that I was going to burn you as a burnt offering to the Lord. Can you imagine how shocked this young girl was? But she says, well, I guess you said it. I guess we'll do it. Was Jephthah doing right? Right in his own eyes, but not in God's eyes. So here's a girl that she wanted to do right, but she is so mixed up that she actually agrees to this. So she says something else that actually makes me think it's hope as I'm reading this. She says, that's great, Dad. Let's do this. But I need to go someplace for a while. And I'll be back. But, I used to have a nephew that he used to do that at restaurants. You know, he'd buy a meal and then he'd say, I got to go to the bathroom and I'll be right back. And he'd get in his car and go, right? So it's like, you know, she says, I've got to go somewhere. It's like, you go, girl. She is out of there. And then I read a couple more verses. She came back. She came back. You were gone and you came back. What's going on? I don't even understand this. But it explains it. You know, everyone did what was right in her own eyes. Here's a girl. She wants to do the right thing, even if it is ending her life. That is so sad. I kind of view this as like beer commercials. In beer commercials, they show people partying, having a good time, and everyone's happy. You know, they're at the beach and there's no snow at the beach. What they don't show is wrecked homes. They don't show people in the hospital. They don't see someone growing up without a father or mother because their mom and dad got killed by a drunk driver. They don't show that. So I think this is a commentary on putting anything before God. when you want to live without God, there's this picture about how you're going to be liberated. And, you know, let us break off the constraints. Let us burst the bars asunder, right? I mean, that's what people want. The people who want to abuse you always talk about freedom. The person who is going to run into you when they're drunk, they demand the right to do that. They crave the liberty to do that. You know, you ever notice that victims don't talk about liberty in the same way? I'll tell you, this girl deserved a whole lot better than that. And just think about this. Jephthah was abused by his family. Jephthah was rejected by his family for nothing that he did. Can you imagine being wronged like that? And you think, you know what, when I have a family, I'm not going to do to my family the way they did to me. And what does he wind up doing? He winds up doing something worse, because Jephthah's brothers never killed him. Like, he actually sacrificed his daughter. You know, you want to do right by your family, you follow the Lord. And you put him first in your life, and you teach these people, and you love these people, and you set an example to these people. So there's a whole nother part to the story of Jephthah. And I actually think it's about family too, because now the Ephraimites show up right after that story. Someone says, well, I mean, did Jephthah actually do it? Well, it says, well, he did to her according to what he vowed. So what did he vow? And did he do it? It's that simple. We don't need more of an explanation. But after all this is done, and the battle is won, and everyone's gone back to their homes, all of a sudden 42,000 Ephraimites show up. Why didn't you call us? And he actually did call them, right? So again, this gets back to very, very unreasonable people. Jephthah shows what a great negotiator he is. And he tries to explain, what do you mean? You know, I called you, everything is good, and, you know, They get into it. And the war actually starts in between the Gileadites and the Ephraimites. And, you know, this is a brother against brother thing, right? Because aren't the Ephraimites part of his family too? I mean, there's something especially sad about Israelites killing Israelites that just seems so sad. And 42,000. That is just so sad. You know, you need to treat your family right. So I guess in closing here, I want to say a few things about family. Number one is, obviously Jephthah's father was unfaithful to his wife. And, you know, someone could say, well, you know, back then, you know, they had concubines and stuff like that. Well, you look at the way his brothers reacted. Obviously, the family wasn't good with what was going on, and therefore they weren't good with one another. If you want to have a solid family, first of all, you need to start by being absolutely true to your spouse. You know, you promise to love this person in better for worse, for sickness and health. You know, even if it kills you, you're going to love this person. No matter what, you're going to be faithful to them. Jesus said, what God has joined together, let no one put asunder. So when you are married, you are joined with that person. It's like you are one. As far as God's concerned, in some ways, yeah, you are one. You're joined together. Sort of like some of those, you know, Siamese twins that you read about. You know, you got one body and two heads. You know, it sounds weird, but it's a lot like that. Can you imagine, like, Siamese twins where, the two heads are actually arguing with each other? It sounds comical, you know. But that's kind of like a fight between a husband and wife. You cannot hurt the other person without it hurting you. You know, you cannot hurt the other person without hurting yourself. You think about that every time you have an argument with your husband or wife. I remember one time, you've been married for a long time. You got some bad spells, right? And I remember one time I was going through some stuff with my wife, and it was my fault, not hers. She's a Deborah, and, you know, I'm like something else. And anyway, I was trying to think about how I should approach her, you know, that this bothers me. Probably bothered me because of pride, and, you know, once you get rid of pride, a lot of stuff doesn't bother you anymore, right? But I actually called Brian. I don't know if you remember this. And I said, well, you know, I want to have this conversation, but I want to have it right. And he said something that was kind of life-changing for dealing with husband and wife stuff. That basically when you're trying to confront someone else, you're trying to do it in a way that actually exalts the other person. And I'd never really thought about it that way. So when you're trying to resolve something with your husband or wife, you're trying to have the conversation in a way that you're exalting the other person. You don't want to tear them down in any way. You're actually trying to exalt them, and that begins by humbling self, right? And I think you'll notice that if you'll humble yourself before the discussion, a lot of the things that you imagined you were going to say, you don't even have to say them anymore because that stuff doesn't bother you now. It doesn't bother you because you've humbled yourself. You've done exactly what's not going on in this story of the book of Judges, but was going on in the story of Deborah. They could humble themselves, and therefore a lot of that stuff just wasn't a problem that you get past chapter 10, and all of it, it's a problem that just never goes away. There's a lot here about his brothers, right? And I think with dealing with Ephraim. Good parenting starts with being a better person yourself. You know, sometimes parents expect more of the kids than they actually do with themselves. When our kids were growing up, I always told them, the only rule in this house is the rule of God, and we're all under it equally. It's very good for your children to see you being accountable for your actions, because you will mess up. Some of us will mess up a lot. Not everybody is a Deborah, right? Some people are very broken. It is good for your kids to see you owning up to the responsibilities and even making good by, let's say, doing good things, not to buy off the hurt, but to set your life on a better course. I think that's the 1 Timothy 1:5 principle, where it says, the purpose of the command is like love from a pure heart and faith from a faith. What is it? Faith. It's basically, I'm having a senior moment here, but it's basically, you know, that the reason why God gives us commands is that you'll have love from a pure heart, and you'll have faith and a good conscience. I'll paraphrase that by saying, the reason why God gives us physical commands is to change our heart. You know, people say, well, if God sees my heart, why should I care about the outward things? Well, because 1 Timothy 1:5, the outward things are deeds that God gives you that will push you in the right direction to change your heart. There are things like that in the family. And your children need to see you doing these things. I'm not doing these things to check off something. I'm doing this because I want to change the heart. Make your kids apologize when they wrong each other. Make them apologize. Someone says, well, why are you so insistent on putting these two together and making them apologize, usually against their will? And it's really simple. You make them apologize because it changes their heart. They say, I'm sorry. I'm not looking for the magic words, I'm sorry. It actually changes their heart. The next time they're going to think twice about doing it. Are they thinking twice about doing it? Guess what? That's the conscience that we just talked about in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5. It is good to be accountable. I teach a lot of children's Bible classes up in Inver Grove, and I always ask the kids, if you do the wrong thing, what is the worst thing that can possibly happen? And they all say, the worst thing that can possibly happen when I do wrong is that I get caught. No. The worst thing that can possibly happen when you do wrong is you get away with it. Because when you get away with it, it emboldens bad behavior and it kills that conscience that you were trying to create by obeying God with a right faith and a right attitude. When you do something wrong and you get away with it, it increases bad behavior. It emboldens bad behavior. It is good to get caught. David said in Psalm 119, it was good that I was punished because then I learned to fear the Lord, right? So when you have to punish your kids, you explain that. The reason why you're doing this is not because you're angry, though you might be angry, but it's to help to build those things. It could have gone very bad, and that would have been you getting away with it. But once you get caught doing something, it makes the conversations just easier to have. And I think when we read this section of the book of Judges, you know, it makes a lot of these conversations a lot easier because not everyone is obedient, right? So you have the early stories like Deborah where this is how I'm going to deal with obedient people. This is how I'm going to talk with good people. And then you have everything after chapter 10, you know, this is how I'm going to deal with some rescue cases. When you are a parent, you will have to engage in rescue, right? So I think there's a lot here that doesn't get a lot of play. The bit about the Ephraimites, I'm going to close because as far as I'm concerned, I'm over time. Bryant tells me I'm not. I think I'm over time. I want you to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 7 through 8 for a moment. And this just deals with dealing with, you know, not only your physical family, but especially your spiritual family. So Judges chapter 2 told us that the people are like in and out and in and out and in and out. And every time they're out longer. And when they're in shorter. And eventually they reach a point where they're not in and out anymore. That happens in chapter 10 of the book of Judges. So it's like in your family members. There's people that are in and out and in and out and in and out, and then they're just gone, right? In the church, there's a lot of people that are in and out, in and out, in and out, and they're just gone. Right before they go out, though, right before they get out, they're going to be offended by something. And it might be very small, you know, they've been in and out, in and out, in and out, and now, you know, you're going to look at them the wrong way or you're going to forget to shake their hand, you know, and sometimes, you know, there's just egregious things. I could give so many examples of this, you know, we could be here all night, but 1 Corinthians chapter 6 verses 7 through 8 says something very interesting when he talks about some of the very serious wrongs that were going on in the Corinthian church. Some of the wrongs between the members of the church were so great that they actually required a court appearance. Now, I wrong people routinely because I have almost no filter on my mouth in 59 years of life. I just haven't learned to think before I talk. You know, and I'm really sorry about that. That's something that I have to work on as a Christian, and it's certain things that's just kind of, you know, par for the course. But I don't think I've ever said or done anything to anyone that's ever required a trip to court. Can you imagine doing something like that to a brother or sister in Christ? So Paul says something about this. He says, you know, with all these things that are going on between these people, have you ever looked at it this way? Why not just let yourself be wronged? Have you ever thought about that? If something is going to be so divisive, then why don't I just let myself be wronged and I'm just going to be good with it and I'm going to bear it? Have you ever thought about that in your marriage? You know, someone in your family said something and, you know, you had the great speech, right? And the great speech, like in this story, the great speech actually gets you in more trouble. You know, then it's time to say, you know, I'm going to love this person anyway. I'm just going to let myself be wronged. If this is what unity takes, I'm just going to let myself be wronged. Now, in the story that we read, the Ephraimites, you know, they all die. Maybe that's John 15, the natural pruning process. People are in and out, in and out, in and out. The last time before they go out, you know, you didn't shake their hand the right way. Now they're gone. You know, maybe that's part of the natural pruning process. But you know what? As far as me, I'm going to try to live peacefully with all people. So I'm going to have to forgive and forgive and forgive and forgive and forgive. That's what it takes to have a strong family. A husband and a wife, in order to have a successful marriage, both of those people need to learn to be good forgivers. And sometimes forgiveness isn't, well, they came and they apologized to me. A lot of this is going to be, you know, I just reached a point where, you know, I'm just going to let myself be wronged like this, and there's some things that I'm just going to bear. And is that going to hurt pride? Sure will. But then the less pride we have, the less it hurts, right? So, wow, is the book of Judges a strange book, you know? But it's a pretty strange world we're living in. You know, if when I was a teenager, I would have thought if someone would have told me that I'd be seeing every day what I see up in Minneapolis every day, I would have never believed them. I would have never believed them. And as society gets more and more off course and some of this stuff starts to bleed in the church, you know, we really need a book like Judges. Because remember, sometimes you have to work with people differently. Not everyone is going to be a Deborah, right? And God, you know, you think about how God was trying to change Jephthah. I don't know if it did if it had the end. But I tell you what, it sure helped set the field for David. And I know this too, and I think this should give everyone here a little bit of courage. If God could use Jephthah, why can't he use you? You think about how great the things were that Jephthah did. Can God do that with me? And sometimes we think, well, you know, God could use me more if I really developed my talents. I've been preaching talents here a lot, right? You know, what if, this is going to sound harsh, what if our talents are just overrated? I said that I think that Jephthah had a significant talent in negotiation. And when I read chapter 11, wow, this guy was just an A-plus negotiator. But did his negotiations work? Sometimes your gifts aren't going to work. Sometimes your best words are going to fail. Sometimes your best intentions are going to be taken completely the wrong way. And sometimes you're going to be left with absolutely nothing but your desire to serve the Lord and to love only Him, if you have to do it alone, whatever it takes, right? Because we're just all in. So I wanted to share those words with you today. I love the Old Testament stories. I think they're so amazing and so incredibly helpful. And I hope you do too. If anyone needs to respond to the invitation to be baptized in the body of Christ for the remission of your sins, becoming a member of God's family, you can do so while we stand and sing the invitation song.